Well, I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News Fidele Kamada. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Michael.
Well, congratulations on being elected for the Beacons Field Ward of the Fremantle Council.
Thank you. And I feel privileged to have the opportunity to represent the people of the area.
It's an important thing, local government. Let me just ask you straight off, what made you want to be a representative of the people of your ward, more generally the Fremantle?
Look, I'm very proud of being from Fremantle. My family history goes way back, and I've found myself in leadership roles through my life, not always because, you know, I've sort them out, but it's just something that's evolved naturally for me, and people have put their faith in me in certain roles. And yeah, I was asked to run the first time that I even thought about it, and I thought, okay, I'll have a go. And you know, and I'll be honest, it was something that I needed to learn more about, but I thought, stick my hand up and we'll see where it goes. And
when was that?
That was, the first time was a by-election. Josh Wilson was elevated to federal parliament.
Right.
And so there's one-year term for this by-election. So I threw my hat in the ring, and there was myself, Andrew Labikas, Hannah Fitzharding, and Peter Cruikshank.
Quite a field.
Yes, there's four of us, and it was a real learning experience. And I did okay in a very short period of time. I picked up a few votes. I think I was second out of that four. And I'd made the commitment that, look, I'd learn from this experience and I'll go again the next year. But I didn't really know what I was getting myself into at that time, because unbeknownst to me, I was against a pretty tough opponent in Hannah Fitzharding. And
our current mayor.
That's correct, yeah.
So her running for mayor, in a sense, I suppose, opened up the possibility of getting...
It very much did. If you asked me 3 months ago if I'd run again, my answer would have been never say never, but not at the moment. It'd have to be, you know, the timing would have to be right. And yes, when I heard that Hannah was running for mayor, I thought it was an opportunity to learn from my previous experiences and have one more crack. And also in my personal life, I've got three boys, my wife and I, and the youngest one had just got his license. So my boys are now more independent, and it frees up a lot of time, you know, that parent time driving.
Yeah, people come to public elected office in various ways, but you can have a lot of commitments which can make it harder. And I can see from what you said, that makes it a little bit easier. When you ran this time, were there particular issues that you were anxious to be heard on?
First of all, I think the outer regions of Fremantle have been left behind a little bit. The infrastructure in, you know, sporting clubs and some of our roads and other facilities around the area definitely are in need of attention. There's reasons for that, but it's something that we really need to focus on in the next 4 years. I suppose I've got 4 years to try and achieve or help achieve some of those objectives.
Yes.
The Heart of Beaconsfield project's a big one.
It is, isn't it?
Very big.
Yeah.
And I believe that we have to be careful what we do there. We need to make sure that if we're going to bring a lot of people into the area, that we cater for a bigger population, that, you know, parking is dealt with. I know we're going to a new era in transport, but that's all got to be part of the conversation. There's people that bought in that area because they like the feel of that area, and you know, young families, and they need space. So our ovals and parks need to be maintained and, in fact, increased. There's probably an opportunity there, albeit a long way down the track, where the quarry is, that area, to actually develop some more ovals and parkland.
Yes.
And this Fremantle is in need of more space for our sporting clubs. Mm. They're really struggling at the moment. And what I really enjoyed when I was door knocking was seeing so many young families, you know, where they'd come to the door and their kids would be running behind them. And even from 4 years ago to now, I noticed a big difference.
The demographic has sort of changed. That was your immediate sense.
Exactly. I think there's more younger people coming through again, which is great. And that means we need to cater for those people.
So public open space in that sense, sporting clubs. And were there any other key issues for you? We've talked about the Heart of Beaconsfield as well.
just through my door knocking, people talked about crime and antisocial behaviour and how it affects their attitude to Fremantle, I suppose.
Yes.
Homelessness is an issue that, you know, we need to be, you know, we need to really make sure that we, and I know it's been at all different levels of government.
Yes.
No one has really come up with an answer that's worked.
Mm.
But those people are in a dangerous environment out there, and we need to look after them and help them get back onto their feet.
Make sure the communities are safe.
Exactly, yeah. And safe for them as well. It's all part of the same conversation to me.
It's such a tricky one. Everyone, particularly all your colleagues on the council who I've interviewed, question of homelessness comes up, about which the council can do certain things. The state government's got much more of a role. And of course, in Fremantle, we've got bodies likes and pats who become involved, but it's a tough one, isn't it?
Oh, it's very tough. And that's something where, you know, I probably came in a bit naive to the complexity of that issue.
Yes.
So, you know, as I'm learning, I'm realising even just the levels of government, you know, that take responsibility and how at times little the council can do in certain situations. But, you know, we have to do whatever we can, work collaboratively and plug away.
Well, I think that's what one does. If I can be permitted, just a strange observation. I remember it was in my early 20s, and the film version of Jesus Christ Superstar, the musical, came out. Yeah. And I'd never really thought about it, but someone was berating Jesus Christ during the course of the movie about poverty. And he just turned to them and looked at them and said, "Look, poverty's always been with us." And I hadn't really thought about it before, but it's true. So it's not something that gets resolved overnight. It probably never goes away. And homelessness, unfortunately, fits into a very broad
It's a work in progress, isn't it?
You can't ignore it, but it's a complex issue, as you said.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Fidele, when you come to this new job, on top of everything else you do, what skills do you see yourself as bringing which enable you to adapt in a certain way to the tasks of a councillor?
I think for me, I've always been good at, I suppose, cooperating with people. I'm a qualified school teacher. So, you know, you have to be obviously understanding and be able to listen and also be able to get your message across in a way that encourages people, I suppose, to be open to ideas and to work together. And that's the attitude I take in. You know, I'm vice chairman of the Western Rock Lobster Council. So, you know, we deal with government and we deal with, trust me, very different personalities, a wide range of personalities within our industry with different issues.
Lobster fishermen all would be easy.
Yeah. It's actually been a real good preparation for coming onto the Fremantle Council.
Yes.
Because it's like a mini version of what goes on. You know, we have our board.
The corporate body, a number of different people, some issues within an industry.
Yeah.
Trying to get some consensus, presumably.
Consensus, yeah, and compromise at times.
Yes.
And then also having to fit in with where the government wants to go.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think those sort of skills, general skills, and it's over. These are skills that I've developed, I suppose, over a long time through experience. And, you know, at 30 years old, it would have been a very different kettle of fish to what I am now at my age now and what I've been through and experienced and seen. Even just having your own family, you know, gives you a sense of understanding about those sorts of issues that people might be concerned about. I think it's just a general thing.
I think in your own case, and you made references to family, you've got pretty long connections going back to Fremantle.
That's right, Michael. We've discovered recently, I always knew that my grandfather came out in 1908 as a 12-year-old.
From Capodilando?
From Capodilando.
Oh, just a rough guess.
Good guess in this place. But then what we found out recently was that his father was already here and was fishing in Coburn Sound with a group of other fishermen from Capodilando in 1898.
1898. Mm. It must have been an exciting place to be, Fremantle, as the 90s went on.
Yeah, I marvel at some of those old photos of the old wharf where the ships used to come in.
Yes, the long jetty.
Yes, outside Bathers Beach there. And
yes.
I look at that and I think, wow, you know, my grandfather and great-grandfather would have walked on that jetty, and just to imagine what it would have been like, and My grandfather was actually, his name's on a petition in the WA Library to build the first jetty so they could unload their fish and crayfish somewhere near where Cicerello's is.
Yes.
And yeah, that was in 1912 that particular petition was signed. I've got a copy
Amazing,
of
isn't
it.
it?
It is.
So fishing was in the family when you were growing up and thinking of being a school teacher?
Yeah, my dad, he started fishing when he was 14 with his brother-in-law. And so all of dad's brothers fished, and I think all but one of his brother-in-laws. So I remember growing up, knowing all the names of the boats that my uncles worked on, and Blessing of the Fleet was a great occasion, and just being involved is just, it just felt like part of who you were. And but I never really thought about fishing myself until I just started university, and dad needed a deckie. My cousin had got off the boat, and summer, I thought, oh, a bit of money through the summer holidays will come in handy. So I said, yeah, I'll do it, Dad. But it was a real shock the first year. We struggled in terms of catching crayfish, and my 17, 18-year-old hands were not ready for the rigors of pulling the winch. And I pulled up.
Your father knew what he was doing.
Yeah, he
He was
knew.
toughening you up, was he?
Yeah, exactly right. So I got through that first year, but I thought, I've done what my father has done, and I'll go off to uni and I'll study to become a school teacher. But then the next summer came around, and I thought, oh yeah, we all need a little bit of money in those summer holidays. And Dad said, look, you'll be back on again. So I thought, great. And it was just a different kettle of fish altogether, just being a little bit more experienced. We caught really well that year.
Couple of extra layers of skin on
Yeah,
the
that's
hands.
right, hardened the hands, a few calluses. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. And from that point on, I made the decision that I'd finish my uni, and I could do relief teaching in my off seasons. And yeah, I really enjoyed the fishing side of it.
Wow.
And it was a great, great contrast, to go from one to the other. And
Yes.
yeah, and I also have always maintained my involvement in sport. Back then, footy and cricket, but now I still play cricket
Yes.
at the Coburn Cricket Club, where I've been since I was 19. So yeah, I really enjoy that community involvement.
Batter or bowler? Or wicket keeper?
Batsman, wicket keeper.
Batsman, wicket keeper.
Yeah.
Well, that's a very important role these days.
It is, yeah,
Are
indefinitely.
you Adam Gilchrist or won't mention the other fellow's name?
No, God, I would never put myself in that category. Probably more like Tim Zora. Flashy batsman, but yeah, solid behind the stumps, I'd like to think.
When it comes to council activities, you've been there, you've seen it from afar, you had desires, ambitions to be there. How does it start to measure up? What committees have you found yourself on so far?
I'm on the Audit and Risk Committee, and also FPOL. And
FPOL's a great name, isn't it? Finance, policy,
policy.
operations, and legislation or
Yes,
something.
that's correct,
I
yeah.
always have to double check it when I see FPOL.
But yeah, I've found it very interesting. It's a steep learning curve, and I've found fellow councillors to be very supportive. We all come from all different backgrounds, and we have different ideas and thoughts, but I've found so far, and I hope it continues on, that they've been respectful of who I am, and I'm certainly very respectful that they all bring different things to the table.
Yes.
There's some skills that they have that I'll never get to those sort of levels in those areas, but I'd like to think I bring other skills to the table that complement what they
Yes.
what's already there.
When you well, you've arrived, when you look forward at this point, have there already been some issues that you hadn't thought about or thought about deeply that now present themselves as bigger, larger over the next 4 years? I mean, those things you've mentioned are obviously important. I mean, the ongoing heart redevelopment, the sporting field is obviously important. Those things are going to be set in train. Beyond that, I mean, one of the big issues that people seem to talk about constantly is what Fremantle's future economy is, and we've got all these maritime connections, and you've got
Yeah, I
the
think
fishing industry connections.
to me it's a pretty broad thing. It's about reinventing to a degree who we are now. A lot of people like to hark back to what Fremantle was, you know, and they talk about the America's Cup and all, you know, and even, I remember even around then, people were saying Fremantle's not what it was, and I think it's something that, you know, evolves, and, oh, you know, they talk about the 50s and 60s, the good things that they remembered, and, you know, now we, our generation talks about the America's Cup, and I'm sure our kids will look back at some of the stuff that's going on now, because that's human nature. However, without a doubt, the economy side of it is not what it was, particularly in terms of retail, that sort of side of things. When I was a kid, I remember from Monday to Saturday afternoon, that east side of Freo used to buzz. And I remember going to the Fremantle markets with Mum on a Saturday morning, and Fremantle was absolutely buzzing. But then bang, 12 o'clock, that was it. People would go to the footy and whatever else. And then Freo would be dead Saturday afternoon and Sunday, all of Sunday. It's incredible how quiet it was. Now it's flipped. Now you've got that from the Cappuccino Strip down to the fishing boat harbour. There's reasonable life there most of the time, particularly, you know, Thursday through to Sunday. And so it's just, it's flipped around, and now we need to just find ways to reinvigorate that city centre and going into that east end. And it's a challenge, but that's, to me, what's going to be the biggest challenge of all, is to get people living in the city and making sure that as the population grows, the amenities are there for them. I mean, I just look at the Fremantle Leisure Centre as an example. How good would it be if we have a bigger population in that part of Fremantle, and they have facilities similar to what Coburn's got at the Arc, for example. And, you know, I think to me they're the big issues going forward.
Yes. There seems to be general acceptance, and I take it from what you've said, that one of the answers at a number of levels for Fremantle is more people, both living in the centre and just generally living within the municipality. From that, you get greater rates revenue, you get more people on the street, which responds to questions of antisocial behaviour, and it's good for businesses, because you need people to support a whole range of businesses. What about beyond the sporting fields, when you move out of the centre of Fremantle, coming in from the outer areas, the Sampsons, the Hiltons, the White Gum Valleys, the Beacons Fields, North Fremantle, are there opportunities or things that are waiting to happen there? Do we?
Yeah.
I often wonder whether we need sort of town centres or the equivalent thereof, whatever they might
be. Yeah, little hubs.
Is there room for that? Or would that?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's happening in Hilton, the town of Hilton, what they're doing around there, and obviously there's a new development going on. But yeah, there's that little bit of a town feel there in Beaconsfield, with the heart of Beaconsfield project. That's part of the master plan.
That should produce the equivalent of a mini town centre, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose for people who to do some of the shopping and maybe perhaps entertaining or going out to cafes, whatever. Yes. To be able to do it nice and close to home is good. To be able to walk or ride their bikes. For older people, that's a good thing as well.
Yes.
Parking's not as much of an issue.
Yes.
So it's good to have those little hubs, but also I think it'd be nice for people to want to come into Fremantle and enjoy what the uniqueness that Fremantle offers.
Yes. Over the last number of years, we've had the question of the port being relocated to Kwinana, and the Westport Task Force recommended that. Not everybody's happy with it. I interviewed the other new councillor recently, Ben Lawver, who's not a great fan of that move. It's in the hands, really, of the state government, and it looks like it's happening. Have you sort of become engaged with that question?
That's probably one of the issues that you asked me about. You know, what's something that's emerged since I've become involved. That's one that I think is really important. It's very... How would you say there's no specifics. There's no real specifics on how that can be done and where it'll go. The way I think of that development is that we should always maintain a working element to our port. I think Fremantle is a port city. Obviously, I've got a link to the fishing side.
Yes.
And very passionate about that. I think that will always remain. But as far as the harbour goes, personally, I'd like to see an element of that maintained and the services be shared between the new port and Fremantle, and there's obviously opportunity for development on, you know, the south side, but yeah, I'd like to think that it'd still remain, you know, at least an element of a working port, because people love it. People love to come when they travel around the world and they go to different ports.
They like the feel of the port.
They do, they like that feel.
And certainly no one's suggested, a bit hard to imagine how it would work anyway, that cruise ships, if and when they resume, would go anywhere except Victoria Quay. Just posted a story today or yesterday, I've lost track, about the old passenger terminal, which has had the two big escalators replaced and the lifts renewed in the place, all ready for the cruise ships returning. So they provide some excitement, don't they? And the ro-ros dropping off all of the vehicles and machinery and equipment and so on still go there. It's not entirely clear what will happen as the container port goes south. So that's one of the questions. You mentioned about the fishing industry, and it's well established around Fishing Boat Harbour. There's no suggestion it would go anywhere.
I think, see, I also sit on that small, the Fishing Boat Harbour management group, and they're very conscious of the importance that the fishing industry has for tourism.
Yes.
People like to see boats come in, and, you know, the backer boats sales system that's been brought into place in the last 2 years has been, you know, a
phenomenal,
huge success. Yes. And you can see the value of fresh product being unloaded. And
it's people, a real fishing boat harbour. The boats come in with product.
That's right. And we, in fact, want to see that grow. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to, you know, buy your sardines or other fish that is brought in, octopus, for example, and be able to buy that fresh and create a real market. And
there's room to have that, if it's expansion, that expansion at Fishing Boat Harbour.
Definitely, definitely.
Well, that's encouraging. I mean, how many boats roughly do we talk about when it comes to fishing boat activity out of Fremantle?
As far as Rock Lobster goes, there's probably about 20 to 30 boats through the year that fish through Fremantle. And then you got Jimmy Mendoli with his sardine boat, you know, it's very romantic.
Yes.
So it's sort of boat, and to watch him come in, that's really old school sort of stuff. So, you know, there's potential there. And the fishing side's a bit harder. The actual, to get fresh demersal fish is a bit more of a challenge, but, you know, there's ways. And then to me, it's a bigger picture thing, because the existing shops there that sell fish like Cicerello's, Kalis, and the more people that come into Freo, if they're coming in to buy a lobster, and you'd be surprised how many people have not been to Fishing Boat Harbour from around the metropolitan area, come in and they ask how to get to meet us to pick up those crays, and they say, oh, wow, this is great. And they'll come back again. They'll go buy a coffee or fish and chips or whatever other products are being sold.
They'll discover Fremantle.
Exactly.
And it might just be worth reminding people who are listening to this discussion about the back of the boat sales. Very briefly, what happened and what happens with back of the boat sales? You can't sell everything overseas. You're able to actually sell, for example, your crayfish catch.
That's right. What happened was the industry went to quota about 10 years ago. And when we went to quota, to protect the integrity of the quota, a system was developed that was so tight that it was impossible to sell a crayfish off the back of the boat, because we had to seal all our containers. And so once we weighed them, you had to wait 10 minutes so that if fisheries could come along and ensure that you were not trying to, you know, to fudge the system. So that meant that in what we used to do in the past in selling to the public suddenly became non-existent. So over a number of years, we've been liaising with government to try and develop a mechanism so that we could start to re-engage with the public and sell, you know, rightly, as they justifiably should be able to buy products straight, direct from the boats. And
it became quite political, as I recall.
It did. They tried a tag program, and that didn't go off the way we would have liked. And there weren't enough, to be honest, anyway. So then, more recently, we used to have a personal consumption system, which only allowed you to bring in a small amount of crays. But so what they did was they piggybacked on the back of that and opened it up and made it initially 100 crays a day that we could sell. And because it was such a big success last year, they increased it straight away to 200 in that Christmas period. And yes, only yesterday an announcement was made by Minister Punch to increase it to 400 in December a day per boat, and then back to 200 for the rest of the year.
So we're meeting the Christmas demand.
Exactly. And it's been, like I say, it's been a huge success, and it's something that we've always wanted to be able to do. And yeah, probably been more successful than I even imagined. You know, we knew this would be the busy time,
Well, it has a real feel of something that's really Fremantle, doesn't it? It's wonderful. As we draw our discussion to an end, you've got that teaching, rock lobster fishing, activity background. How do you fit all that with, do you think, being a councillor now? Is it presented challenges for you already?
It has, but this is a busy time now, so if I can get through this month, I should be right. I'm pretty flexible with fishing. So when I've got something important with council, I'll be able to ensure that you know, I'd manage the load. We won't fish as much. Plus, my afternoons are pretty much always free. So the time is I'll be able to make the time without a doubt. In the past, I've coached local cricket clubs and footy clubs, and that's time that where I that's where I learned to manage my time, I suppose. And I'm not doing that now, so that's freed up a lot of time. And as I said, just driving the kids around, that sort of thing, their sports and
Yes.
school and you name it, that's freed up a bit more time. So yeah, I'll be able to manage it, no problem. I've made the commitment, so you've just got to do it.
So all that energy, all that sporting energy will be taken along to the new Civic Centre in
That's right.
Royallup Court.
Yeah, it'd be nice to be there.
Well, look, it's been lovely talking with you. Congratulations again on being elected for Beaconsfield, and the best of luck in all your endeavours on the council.
Right, thank you very much, Michael. I've enjoyed the conversation.